This is Bristol, and you are listening to a podcast from the Bristol Confringe reading series.
All right, so we're going to do a little bit of Q&A. So I'm going to turn to John first, and I'd just like to ask you where you got the idea for these steam elephants from.
Hi, it's Richard Salt. It was one of those stupid ideas you boot backwards and forwards via email, or we did in the past. And then I lurched out of the Arnolfini monumentally drunk on, must have been Scrumpy, and just, and the light was behind the cranes, and it was like, wait, steam elephants, cranes. Ha 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 ha! And that's how that happened.
That was in Airship Shape and Bristol fashion, wasn't it? The story with the cranes, yes. Which is very good, you should all buy it. Just thought I'd mention it. You should all buy it again if you haven't already bought it. Yes.
And this may just be... Everybody I know seems to assume I do LARP or some kind of D20 goblins, and I don't. And I was, again, trolled off my brains in Whitby, seems to be a theme, and chatting to this geezer called Drew, who was from Glasgow, about the whole notion of steam elephants. And I was rambling, and he came back the following morning when we were both steamingly hungover with this closely written two sides of A4 about how steam elephant manoeuvres and troop formations would work. And you know the sort of stereotypical writing by lunatics, which is really close together and the diagrams are very careful? Just like that. Drew is a very nice chap, by the way. He's just quite far away at the moment, which is nice.
Sometimes the better... You know, this is being recorded. And put on the internet. Yeah. Yes, true. Stark, Laura, Stark. Hello, Stark today. All right, you had, I know I probably asked you this before, but you had an interesting route to publication, didn't you? Because you wrote Nunslinger as a series of novellas, which you then put together into a book. So could you just talk to us a bit sort of through that and tell us about how that came about?
So, continuing on with the theme of drunkenness, mine, actually, the idea for Nunslinger came one Sunday when I was really hungover, and we were watching, there was some awful Western on TV, and it had a nun, and, you know, it's not that unusual to find nuns in Westerns. You've got two mules for Sister Sarah, and this one was called something like, I think it was called Madron, but it was terrible. This nun, after about 5 minutes of being in the West, just sort of forgot she was a nun, and shacked up with this grizzled cowboy, and I was just like, she's not taking this very seriously, is she? You know, she's meant to be a nun. So I thought, we sort of joked around and came up with Nunslinger. I thought, well, I'll just write it. So I did. I wrote, it was 12,000 words. It was just one silly thing. And I had an agent at the time. We were sort of working on something else. And I sent it to him just as sort of an apology for being late with an edit. With an edit for something else. I was like, I'm so sorry, I haven't got back to you. But anyway, I've been writing this other thing. And he said, oh, okay, well, I know someone who might really like this, which I was astounded by. I was like, what do you mean? I just sent it to say sorry for being late. But it turned out to be my editor now, Anne Perry, who grew up in California. She grew up with Western, she loves them, and she is possibly the only person in the UK publishing industry who would ever have said yes to a book called Nunslinger. But I went to a meeting with her and a couple of colleagues, and we went anticipating maybe they wanted three short novellas, so, you know, that's, I don't know, 45,000 words or so, give or take. But we sat down at lunch, they said, okay, yeah, great, yeah. So how do you feel about 12? And I said, 12 what? I said, 12 books. All right, okay. Okay, yeah, sure. So that's how Nunslinger happened. And then 12, I wrote them all as they were being published. So the first three came out Boxing Day last year, then March, then June, then September, and I was writing them all as I went along. So it turned out to be something like 180,000 words in about 9 months, which was intense, but brilliant, and the best education I could have had in writing, because we proofed, copy edited these things 12 times, and it was fantastic. So that's how it. And I didn't realise how much I'd written until I saw it printed, and it was like, it's like, what? Who did that? But anyway, that's how it.
I've done that 180,000 word things in 9 months as well, and it just kind of, it fries your brain. I was wandering around the co-op wondering why people weren't trying to kill me. Because I'd spent so much time with my head in the book and people were trying to kill people all the time. It's quite fun actually, when we went to Gareth's launch for Macaque Attack, and we went into the Brass Pig afterwards and they were showing episodes of Gunsmoke on the big TV, so we all just kind of started to go, hey, camels.
I'm about halfway through Nunslinger, and the thing that I've been really fascinated by is your use of voice. And why did you choose to write it in first person? Because you can never let the voice slip, as it were, when you're writing in the first person. And how did you maintain it? But now that you said you wrote the whole thing in a sort of awful situation, so that might explain how you maintained it.
I don't know. I mean, I didn't consciously choose to write it in the first person. I mean, the first line of the whole book is, of the wagon train there was nothing left, that is what I first recall. And that's the line that first came to me. And the whole massive behemoth that it is now stems from that one line. So I sort of accidentally just locked into first person, but it turned out to be perfect for what I was trying to do, which is, and at one point I was envisaging it as sort of, I thought, oh, this would be quite a fun graphic novel, but then I quickly realised that there's so much soul searching that goes on in it. The questioning part is a really big part of it, actually. You know, it's called Nunslinger, it's fun, it's in the West, there's lots of guns and shootouts, but at its heart it's about someone who's really struggling with her life and her ideals and concepts of what she's grown up with. So I lost track, but it was perfect for that, and so her voice sort of developed, I suppose. But yeah, you're totally right, having it in a very contained very quick kind of tight writing framework really helped in that. I sort of she was always there kind of talking, and yeah, so that sort of answers that, I suppose. It was very fun to write, isn't I? And occasionally would find myself thinking, maybe I should go get a wimple and a habit and walk around.
What else is it? Anybody else? Anybody else?
What are you working on next?
Complicated question. I'm a bit addicted to pseudonyms, so I can't actually say what I'm working on next, because I have a few pseudonyms. So, but hopefully in the future, I do have a sort of vague Nunslinger follow-up planned, and this is the first I've talked about it, so it might not even happen. I have ideas, but it would be based around a character in the books called Benjamin Reasoner, who is he's based on an amazing character in real history called Bass Reeves, who was the first African-American lawman. He's so interesting, so Benjamin Reasoner in my book. And it would be a series called Reasoner and Rhyme. Continuing with the pun, so that's sort of rumbling along at the moment, but watch this space, and I might be able to talk more. He did, amazingly, and he sort of disappeared off into the Indian Territory, which Oklahoma was called the Indian Territory until 1910, which is pretty crazy. disappeared off into the Indian Territory for 3 months once, and then came back with 7 bandits, roped up, all on mules, with a really big beard, because he hadn't shaved. He'd, you know, put on disguises and trick people, and he could speak 10 Native American languages, and he never got injured once in 30 years of being a marshal. He was amazing, but so I might steal him a bit for my plans, but I don't know. He was. And hopefully more news on that sometime.
Right, is everybody done? No more questions? Well, where is Justin? Yeah. We have hundreds of questions. He asks questions that kind of make you go, I don't know. He asked me once, I wrote a story about a woman who had the ghost of her dead brother in her head, and he kept saying, but is it like the voice of her conscience and her guilt? And I'm like, no, it's the voice of her dead brother. There's nothing metaphysical about it. It's a ghost. Right, messages. Pete, I think, might have some messages. Have you got any messages? Ah, yes, free wine. At the end of February, Gareth and I are doing a reading at Bristol Central Library, which also features free wine! Courtesy of BristolCon. So that's, I believe that's at 7 on the 27th of February, at the big library in the town centre. So that'll be fun. Anybody else got any news, gossip, slander, announcements? Which is on the 16th of March, is Chris Cutting and Paul Cornell. So that should be a good one. So hopefully we'll see some of you then. Oh, pub night in here next week. 7:30, beer, talking bollocks, all that stuff. All right. Thank you all for coming, and can we have a round of applause for Stark and John?
BristolCon Fringe is a monthly reading series produced by the BristolCon Foundation. Our thanks to the Shakespeare Tavern for providing us with a venue. The music at the beginning of this podcast is The Future by Chevy 174.